Hey, everybody. Welcome back. I like to say welcome back because it's been a while. It has actually been almost a year, but welcome back and welcome in to the first / 81st episode. We're going to start over. We're just going to call it the first, but the first episode of the Drive-In Double Feature. Want to first off introduce my co-host, Ben Norsworthy. You guys know him because he has been on many a podcast with me. He had his own podcast and we also shared another podcast. So we have done lots of business together over the past couple of years. And we're also teacher friends. So in this day and age, that means a lot. Ben, first off, welcome, man. I'm happy to have you on board, not just as a guest, but a co-host.
It's back. That triumphant return of the Drive-In. Yeah, I'm very excited about this. You know, of course, with everything going on, we haven't had a lot to do. So I feel like this is the, I think you mentioned the other day, a perfect creative outlet to get to talk about some films, get to talk about some actors and actresses, and make a podcast.
Yeah, I definitely took off some time. I looked it up before we got going today. November 1st of last year was the last episode. Kind of ironic because of our topic today, but it was Zombieland 2. It was our the second Zombieland, and I was with Aaron Brewer. We talked about that, and that was episode 80. And then life happened, the holidays happened, coronavirus happened, school happened, everything. And it just wasn't really at the top of my priority list. But I have to admit, somebody was in the back of my mind saying, "Hey, when are you gonna get back on Drive-In? When are you gonna come back?" And I was like, "Oh, I don't know." And that voice was you. And then not too long ago, you said, "Hey, let's talk movies again.
Let's tag team this."
And we rebooted it. Reboots happen in film all the time, so we're gonna have a reboot on the podcast as well. So,
but this one's gonna be good.
Oh, that's shady. All right. No, I will. I'm so happy because honestly, some of the best episodes of the Drive-In were the times that you came on. You know, we had some great discussions. We both agree we're going to have to probably monitor ourselves a bit more.
Monitor our talking.
Yeah, our time goes over when we get going just because we have good conversations. So I'm excited to be able to tag team it, like you said, and. As you mentioned, too, we are going to have...
I'm just glad the Drive-In's back.
And it's not going to be just the Drive-In. So that's something I want to kind of clear up, clarify and whatnot, is this is the Drive-In, yes, but it is a reboot. So you will still see some movie reviews. You're going to get some of that. I'm sure from time to time we'll have a drunk Drive-In or something where, you know, like I said, we're teachers. We might need a Friday or Saturday movie and a beer occasionally. And so we'll do a little bit of that, but we're going to... talk about some actor profiles, director profiles. We're going to hit some very highly debated topics. You can bet your ass we'll be talking about who shot first, Han or Greedo. You know, we'll be taking care of all of those big conversations. And but you will also get a bit of the old school reviews and all the things that you enjoyed, hopefully, about the old podcast.
Because here's the thing. There's no movies. The movie theaters have slowed down tremendously. Everything is being pushed back. So I feel like this is a great time to really expand on the idea of what the Drive-In is and take it into different territories and really spill our knowledge of film and our love for movies.
Yeah, thank God for Netflix and for Apple TV Plus and Prime
Disney
Video. Disney
Plus,
everything. You know, the streaming services have saved people like us because I have not been in a movie theater since last November. I take that back. Since last December when I saw Star Wars, when I was able to see the final installation of that. But yeah, it's been a while. I don't think I've been in a theater since December, which is really weird to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I went to a movie in January and that was it.
I want to say I saw something maybe after that, but I don't think so. So yeah, I've seen plenty of movies, but that movie theater popcorn, I'm jonesing for it at this point.
We had a baby and then that was it. No more movie theaters. Everything's streaming, you know, because you can't leave the house. And then, you know, everything happened with the pandemic and now you really can't leave the house. So it's the streaming services has been very lucky to kind of hit a gold mine.
Yeah, I mean,
because of what's going on.
And what we've seen is a lot of these films may be going to streaming services. Disney is putting out a lot of their movies that were going to get theatrical releases. Yeah. You know, Onward got about a couple weeks and then it went to Disney Plus. Frozen 2 had a great run in the theaters. And then they released it online very quickly. Skipped over the whole 2 or 3 month gap between theater and DVD.
My 6-year-old is a big Trolls fan, and we were one of the first ones that Friday night when it opened on streaming service, we got Trolls 2 and streamed it right there. And he thought that was great. We had popcorn, we made like little movie tickets and things like that. Cause everything was shut down, but it was, I mean, if anything, that's the way to go. This pandemic will eventually be over, but now do movie organizations say, hey, for an X amount of price, we can have it straight to your TV.
You know, and that's weird because for somebody like me, I've yet to do that. We have not done one yet, but I will say that needs to be a potential topic here for one of our upcoming episodes, because there are a lot that I want to see. I still haven't seen Harley Quinn, King of Staten Island with Pete Davidson. Looks great, just haven't seen it. So there's a lot of movies that have been out I haven't gotten my hands on yet.
And I understand, like, you know, I understand and agree with the argument being made that some movies it's just an experience to go to the theater to get your popcorn and get your Coke and go see. Like, you would never see, like, you know what, I'm gonna stay home and watch Avengers Endgame in my theater in my house. No, that's something you go see in the movie theater. You go see a Star Wars in a movie theater, you know. Maybe, mm-hmm. you know, you see like the next Edward Norton movie at home.
and that's why I have no problem with them holding back Black Widow.
Yeah.
You know,
like I don't want to see Wonder Woman or Black Widow in my house.
No, but a good, you know, comedies don't need to be seen on the big screen. Give me some comedies, some new fresh material. Keep pumping that out and I'll eat it up. So let's go ahead and move on to this week's topic. We kind of, you know, as you guys can tell, me and Ben can just go. We can just talk about what has or hasn't come out yet. But we'll save that for another episode.
Plus, we haven't actually seen each other in a while, so we got a lot to get out.
I know. And I say, we kind of caught up a little bit as we're trying to figure out what to do this week. But outside of that, it's been a while. So, Ben, go ahead and introduce what this week's topic is. It's a little morbid and a little dark, but hey, so are we. So it fits the time. Ben, what is this week's category, this week's topic?
This week, for the triumphant return of the drive-in, we are doing our top 3 virus pandemic / zombie movies. So basically, we're doing our top 3 virus pandemic movies, end of the world movies. We sat down and we talked it over the other night. We got into a Facebook Messenger argument over what classifies as a virus / pandemic movie. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to each give our top 3 and an honorable mention and why we like this movie. So, you know, you have something to watch. A lot of these movies are currently streaming on Netflix or Amazon or HBO Max. So, I mean, this is the perfect time to watch it right now, right?
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned HBO Max. That's one that I would highly recommend to people. I have to thank Jack, a friend of mine who's actually been on the podcast multiple times. And actually, he loves bad disaster movies. So he may actually tune in and enjoy this. So a shout out there to Jack for sharing the HBO Max, because it is amazing. I recommend splitting it with a friend, or if you can afford it, go ahead and spend the money on it. It is fantastic. There's some great, great original content, but also some great original stuff there too. But
plus that Snyder cut's coming.
That's what got me. I know. It's like they knew what they were doing a year out. They're announcing it and like, oh, hey, we're going to have that too in, you know, a year and a half. Doesn't matter. I want it now. Just in case it gets released early.
Yeah.
All right. So
that's what we're doing. We're top 3 virus movies. Do you want to do honorable mentions first?
Yeah, let's go ahead.
The cut?
Let's go ahead and we'll give our honorable mention. It'll also be good because my honorable mention was the source was the fire underneath that Facebook Messenger discussion / argument. So, but I'll hold off. I'll wait. I'm going to make people wait for it. Ben, what was your honorable mention film?
So I don't, I mean, I kind of found this kind of tough to do. Like, this was a really kind of to trim the list, because you can't have a list for, you know, even if we had four or five on here, we would be here till midnight. So this was kind of a hard list. So my honorable mention was 28 Days Later, with Cillian Murphy. I think I liked it because what I liked about it was, is that it was a different type of zombie that they had with it. That, so once you get infected, because I don't know if you could technically call them zombies.
Because, yeah, I mean, they acted infected, like, I think,
yeah,
but
they ran. That was like one of the first times we saw zombies just like bolt.
Yeah.
Which was what I thought was neat. And, you know, I the best part of the film, I think, is the first 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, and it's been a while since I've seen that, but I remember the first time that I did, and I was late to the party. That was one that a lot of people talked about, and it eventually I went and sat down and watched it, and it was just really well done. It's a great movie, and it kind of just depends. At least I think for me, you know, I'll be curious to see what your top three are, because it's really well done, but it rests on those edges of categories, on those genres.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually like to find things, like, especially with this category, I want things that are a little bit off the radar. Like, I like big pandemic end of the world movies just as the next person, but I also like things that somebody may not necessarily know of that you could introduce them to. So.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's get to this. Go ahead.
So my honorable mention, and I will fight you. I will fight you right now, and I will continue to fight you, is Bird Box. So when I first saw Bird Box, I was all in for it. When I heard all of the discussion and the hype behind it, I was like, all right, let's see what this is. Jordan and I sat down and I was like, holy hell, this is really good. So I don't know if you enjoy Bird Box or not. We never even discussed that. But
I will go out and
say Bird Box is a virus pandemic style movie, but I will first off cede that it is not in the traditional sense. Kind of like you said, you like to grab those that are out there and not as well known. I do that, but with well-known movies, but this is the English teacher in me making that deep discussion and reaching and saying, okay, but what if, and twisting it. I think it's a virus movie in the sense that the monsters themselves do not kill you. And spoiler alert, if you haven't seen any of these movies, we're going to talk about a little bit. We're not going to give you the entirety of everything as we talk about everything today and as we go through. But if you haven't seen a lot of these movies, as we start talking about it, skip ahead a few times until you have seen a movie. But we are going to do a little bit of spoilers. I just wanted to throw that out there. So a little bit of Bird Box spoilers. There's creatures, yes. And they don't kill you. I think the movie never really discusses what happens to you. But when you see them, you are compelled, you are infected, so to speak, with this burning desire to kill yourself. It is an unquenchable suicidal drive.
But you could also say one is possessed. So you could say it's a possession movie.
I don't think it's a possession. I don't think it's...
How do you get a virus to kill yourself? Like, that, explain to me how is a bit what we know about virus movies and the ones that we're going to talk about. How do you get a virus to kill yourself? It is a possession. It is a drive to kill yourself. It is an uncontrollable. It's like being possessed. Like, I can't control what I'm doing because something has overcome me with this thing to kill myself.
But you're still aware, though. Like, throughout the movie, the people are still aware. They just can't stop themselves. Where it's different from, like, The Happening, which is very similar in the sense, you know, in some sort of way of this drive to kill yourself, but the people almost become zombies in a way. They are no longer themselves. They just go blank and kill themselves.
So was the woman in, oh my God, what's the movie that was the woman in Hereditary? Did she have a virus when she started, you know, trying to kill her son and stuff?
That's different because it's killing the sun.
Okay, so I think you're reaching here.
It's different if it's like an isolated incident, but this was like, this was global. This is a global incident. This is a pandemic situation of a contagent, so to speak, a infected.
Do they ever mention virus in the movie? Do they ever mention something like being, you know?
No, but they don't know what it is. They don't know what it is even when they get to the end. They just know how to survive it. So, like, I think that's part of the mystery with it, for me at least, is that there's that ambiguity of, and I haven't read the book. I do need to read the book. I have the book. But within at least the film, they don't, at least to my recollection, they don't actually discover what is happening other than they see it and you can't see it or you're going to kill yourself. Like once you have that sight. So this is one of the things that we are going to push to social media. You know, and again, I may be in the minority. Everybody might tag team against me and beat me up and berate me and call me mean names on the Facebook. But I'm going to say Bird Box still and always will be a viral movie, but it's a paranormal virus. I will agree that it is not in the same sense. So it stretches to a different
genre. I just think you've been quarantined for too long.
Well, we all have.
All right, let's get to our top three here.
All right. So
we'll be here till all night arguing about that.
Oh, absolutely. And it's going to be something that will undoubtedly work its way into next week's episode. Even though once this gets released, we'll have already recorded week two. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that at the end of the podcast, though. So what's your number three? Coming in at number three for you is what?
My number three is Cargo 2017. It is a Netflix original. It stars Martin Freeman from The Hobbit, also Black Panther, Sherlock Holmes. So, and like I was telling you before we started recording this, he was the only major star in the movie. Like, I did not recognize anybody else, which is fine, which is kind of opposite of what my number one is. But it's for me, it's not the typical zombie outbreak virus movie, but it's the end of the world, but it's more panicky because when the movie starts, everything's already happened. The virus has taken over. It's start and post stuff. So, and it's one of those things, it's basically like the synopsis is there, it's a man, he's in Australian outback. It's the cinematography's great in it. Like it's just really shot beautifully. And he's a father who searches for someone willing to protect his daughter. He has like a 1-year-old child and he's been bit. Within the first 10, 15 minutes of this film, you know, he's not going to make it. And so, and they do a great job of explaining what happened. So in the film, he has this med kit that is given out by the government and it has a little watch in it. He puts the watch on and he says, you have 48 hours. Once 48 hours hits, you will transform into a zombie type thing. So he has 48. So the entire film is basically 48 hours of him trying to get his daughter to someone that can take care of her because he's fucked.
Hmm.
And, you know, I saw it back when it first came out, but now that I just had a baby back in November, this one like really like hit hard. I don't know if I classify it as a horror, more of a dramatic thriller with some horror elements, but it was tough. And you know, here's the thing, by the last 15 minutes of the film, my wife was in tears. I think this is the first zombie movie I've ever seen somebody cry at. Like she was in tears.
Funny because story. The very first zombie movie I can remember seeing. I don't remember how old I was. I was probably in middle school, but it was the remake Dawn of the Dead. And the first,
which was really good too.
Very good. I didn't appreciate it until the second or third time I saw it later, because when I first saw it, that first opening sequence with the little girl who comes in, I was terrified and I wanted to leave. But the problem was, is I was with a group of friends who would have made fun of me relentlessly if I would have left the theater. So I stuck it out and I enjoyed the movie. Very well done. It's awesomely, put together. It actually was one that I considered putting on my list, but that was the first time I nearly cried out of fear in a zombie movie.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very simple film. You know, he has 48 hours to protect and raise his child. And then on top of that, find someone that he hopefully in this post-apocalyptic pandemic trusts to raise a one-year-old child. You know, it's just, and I think, you know, I mean, I know he's been in a lot of films and TV shows, but I think this is like one of his best performances because he's very serious, but he's a comedic actor. So he has little hints of good dialogue that is borderline funny, whether he meant to or not. So it's on Netflix right now. It's a Netflix original.
That is another one. I have not seen it. You've said I need to watch it, and it is now on the list. It is on the queue of things to check out. So I will have to watch that one. I'm a huge Freeman fan.
He's really good in it.
It is one of those that I had heard of before, but now that it is on your list of tops, I will definitely have to check it out.
What's your number three?
Number three for me, a callback to the last episode of The Drive-In. This is Zombieland. This is not Double Tap. Double Tap was fun, but it was nowhere near as strong as the first. I enjoy zombie movies, but I think for me, I've always enjoyed the comedic approach. Shaun of the Dead also almost made it onto my list as of that, for that reasoning. I think just Zombieland was, for its time, it was exactly what the genre needed. It was zombie films kind of got stale for a while. They're coming out. It was the same formula over and over again. You occasionally get something new, but you hadn't really, gotten, and I'm pretty sure Shaun of the Dead, I'm going to double check this, my computer. But I'm pretty sure that Shaun of the Dead came out before this. Shaun of the Dead. Yes, it did come out in 2004. So it predates it about 5 years, but Zombieland, I think, as an American version, essentially, of Shaun of the Dead, with Woody Harrelson and Jesse Eisenberg and Emma Stone, Abigail Breslin, it was a perfect ensemble. It's tough to get that right every time in those zombie films. I just thought it was hilarious. I still, to this day, will quote a multitude of lines from the film, limber up being one of them, before I go and do something in, you know, multiple situations, got to limber up. You know, I think that the approach of using using kind of a desperado in Woody Harrelson as a, you know, somebody who is alpha on his own, they used a lot of the tropes right. And you know, that's something that if you start watching enough zombie movies, you'll see things repeat themselves. Some of the categories, the mediums, the motifs, they're going to pop up a lot. And I thought Zombieland did just a fantastic job of playing on those and also delivering a really good scary movie. It wasn't making of everything. It still was a horror movie. It, you know, there were jump scares and there were really good effects with a lot of the zombies. So they didn't sacrifice that, which you will see sometimes, and people will spoof a genre. No, they just added comedy to it. So for that reason, Zombieland comes in as my number three. And I think we can agree, at least in that one, that does qualify as a pandemic virus movie.
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, when you picked that, I was like, oh, that girl gets sick in the beginning, that he takes her and stuff. Does that qualify? One thing I was pointing out, like, so Zombieland came out, what, 2009?
Yep.
It was, I kind of believe, like, I think the Resident Evil franchise kind of sucked the soul out of zombie movies, you know? And then in 2009, you had Zombieland. And then in 2010, you had Walking Dead come on. And I think those two things with kind of re-energized the genre, because you can make a scary, funny movie with mm-hmm. Zombieland, and you can make a weekly dramatic TV series based on the apocalypse of zombies. So I think those two things really kind of, and then of course now everybody was doing zombies, you know,
it's everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. The monsters go in cycles, you know. For a while there was just all vampire stuff. And now it's zombies, and Frankenstein's just waiting to get his, comeuppance.
Yeah, and it's just I do have to say that I enjoy this idea of Zombieland also holding out for that sequel. The sequel lent itself to a quick, like, turn it around. This is very popular. People loved it. Let's get out a sequel. They waited 10 years, and it also waited 10 years within the storyline, which that was really fun to, as a as a viewer to have seen all of these actors go through 10 years of progression and then bring them back in and say, oh, okay, here it's also been 10 years in this world, and they could expand upon it. So while I didn't think Double Tap was nearly as strong, I did like that philosophy that you take the time to actually allow the characters to go through things, and then you can bring that in. And doing that, that they do that with, your Toy Story movies and Monsters, Inc. and those kinds of things. And it works out when you actually wait, it does work out most of the time, I will say. Yeah. What's coming in at your number two?
Number two, Cabin Fever by Eli Roth, 2002. I remember seeing this in my senior year of high school. This is his, Eli Roth's first big foray into extreme gore. It's a bunch of college students that go into the cabin in the woods trip. And then, of course, a flesh-eating disease ruins that time. And there's a lot of blood. It's a lot of gory. And, it's, of course, it's got that that Eli Roth kind of twisted sense of humor that you see in a lot of his films. I like this movie because of one, you have this invisible enemy, which I guess is a phrase being thrown around a lot. There was never some like monster or type of ghoul or something like that to get them. And the special effects in it were really good. They did a lot of practical effects where people's skin was coming off. And, you've seen it. Have you seen it?
Yes, I have.
Where that girl is trying to shave her legs.
Yep.
And her skin just keeps peeling off.
That is one of those experiences that when you get the quote heebie-jeebies, I will never forget the feeling of watching that scene. It is disgusting. It's so well done.
And it doesn't end well.
No.
I'm a man that appreciates movies that don't end well. My wife likes movies that get wrapped up at the end and everything and put a bow on top. I am okay with shit not ending well.
Yeah.
And this doesn't end well. If in fact, it ends with the more water, the town water being contaminated.
Yeah, it ends with not just those people being kind of more or less screwed. It ends with, hey, guess what? More is going to happen. You just don't get to see it.
Yeah. And for me, this film was, I feel like at the time was kind of judged unfairly, kind of like when Hostel first came out. They just call it gore porn or something like that.
Yeah.
But this, to me, when I first saw this, I was like, oh, this is like one of those 80s style B splatter movies that came out in the 80s. It was a harken back to that, which I think that's what Eli Roth, I would think, meant to do. And plus the writing in it was so fresh. It was like, it was dialogue that I could relate to because I heard it all around me because I was a 17, 18 year old person at the time. So it just has a little space in my heart, Cabin Fever.
Well, I think a part of the judgment too is that its leading man was Ryder Strong, who I think anybody who doesn't know the name, if you looked up the picture of Ryder Strong, you're going to know exactly where you know that face from. The buddy on Boy Meets World. How can you have, and it was done well, but if you go in and you see that, you're like, how is this guy going to be in a horror movie? That could have been a little bit of that judgment. Yeah.
It wouldn't happen today.
Oh no. But you do get that throughout where sometimes people will try something new. And I think for him at his age in that time period, it was perfect for his career. But people are not easy to just pass that off and say, oh yeah, let's give him a shot. So
yeah. And the thing with this movie, it has to be taken straight. Like there's no hidden meaning within the film. There's no metaphoric meaning. There's no twist. It is just a straightforward shit is contaminated. There's a virus and we're all dying because we're all, bits and parts of us are coming off.
Yeah, absolutely. So my number two, actually, I'm glad I had some time this past weekend to go back and watch it. It's been a while, but I knew it stuck out to me for some reason. Was 12 Monkeys.
Okay.
So 12 Monkeys, if you have not seen it, those of you out there who have not seen it, 12 Monkeys came out in 1997, I believe. Double checking that real quick. 1995. But it came out in 1995, directed by Terry Gilliam. Terry Gilliam is best known for a lot of his Monty Python work. But he's done a great amount of work since then. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is him. Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, kind of one of my favorite under the radar films. He does a lot of weird, trippy things. But 12 Monkeys really wasn't that bizarre. The plot itself is kind of weird, but it doesn't have that fantasy element that he's become known for. But what 12 Monkeys for me does is, it brings together a good group of people, a good group of actors, and it twists your understanding of the genre. I will never forget. And I mean, I could probably go and watch just the scenes with Brad Pitt in them over and over again. It is an acting clinic, in my opinion, his scenes, at least especially the first couple that you have with him in the asylum. Just phenomenal. And it was great to see him combined with Bruce Willis, where Bruce Willis had been kind of the established actor and Brad Pitt in 95 was still up and coming. So you see him together with, and he made Willis, he overshined in Willis in those scenes. Yeah. Just phenomenal.
I think the Brad Pitt in this film is the Brad Pitt we have now. Like in 12 Monkeys, we got a glimpse, a snapshot of the Brad Pitt we know now. And like, all the stuff that he's done with like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and, mm-hmm. and things like that. I think that was a great film for him to attach himself to.
Oh, absolutely. Because
he was close to getting himself labeled in like the River Runs Through It and the Thelma and Louise movies and things like that, where he's just like, yeah, he's got a good looking face and a good looking body and he could say dialogue.
Yeah. A pretty boy who can sell a good romance and a drama. Occasionally throw him into an action movie, but don't have him do too much, you know? But no, he has since then gone on to do some amazing things. I would love for us to do a Brad Pitt profile at some point.
That would be hard to
narrow exactly. Down. Well, and that's something too, is I think that, you know, when you look at him and Bruce Willis in this movie, Willis is not really shine for me in this film. You kind of get just the stereotypical, just not sure where he is. I think he helps drive the plot within 12 Monkeys. But for me, it's Brad Pitt and it's the storyline. It is the misdirection. Yeah, it's a very misdirection film throughout.
And I kind of appreciate it because it was within the genre of the timeline movies, but different. There's just something about it that's like, well, this is not like Terminator. Mm-hmm. This is not like Back to the Future, all the different time travel movies. This is something really different because the shitty stuff that has happened in the future has already happened.
Mm-hmm. They're just trying to figure out where so they can try to not prevent it, but go back and live with it. They're trying to, well, eventually they do try to prevent it. By the end, he tries to shoot the guy that goes on to, and again, hey, talk about a movie that doesn't end well. The guy still gets on the plane and, the person who is sitting next to him is one of the ladies that is sending Bruce Willis back in time. So, things still happen. The world still goes through this pandemic. The world has to live through this disease. But yeah, I picked 12 Monkeys more or less on the backs of Brad Pitt. I will say, have you seen the TV series 12 Monkeys?
No, I have not.
Okay, because I haven't either, but I've heard nothing but amazing things. So I need to kind of take some of this quarantine time, the end of the summer, and watch it. It is on my short list, but my short list isn't very short now these days. It's becoming longer and longer. But yeah, so 12 Monkeys comes in at my number two. Let's go ahead and give the reveal. Number one virus pandemic style movie for you.
My number one virus pandemic, I don't think you could go any further, but I am picking Contagion. 2011. This film was really ahead of its time. And just real quick, let's just go through the cast. Matt Damon, Kate Winslet, Jude Law, Gwyneth Paltrow, Lawrence Fishburne, John Hawks. You also had Marianne Cotillard. This movie was just loaded with people. And here's the thing. Spoiler. Gwyneth Paltrow dies in the first 10 minutes. Yep. First 10 minutes, she's gone. And it's like, this is like, you know how you have like those films like Love Actually, and they have different, it's the same, it's different small stories within the same world. Same thing, but this is a horror. I don't know if it's a horror, but it's a pandemic film.
It's a thriller for sure.
It's definitely a thriller.
Action thriller, driving, yeah.
And no, I just rewatched this the other night with my wife, and you know, we were just kind of like at a speechless because of how much this film made back in 2011 was a sign of what things are going on right now. So healthcare professionals, government officials, and everyday people find themselves in the midst of a pandemic, and the CDC works to find a cure. In the movie, you find out this thing was spread by bats. This thing is airborne. People are being told to wear a mask. People are dying. The world is in pandemic. They're trying to find a cure, a vaccination. The Jude Law's character is one of those right wing, but one of those people that is out there spreading false information about the pandemic and making money off of it. Mm-hmm. There was even a part, and I forget what the drug's called, but there was even this rumor going around like, hey, there's this drug that exists that you can take and it will help you fight this disease that everybody's catching. And Jude Law gets on TV on his little blog thing. He's like, I'm taking this drug and I'm not getting the virus. And that, like, I looked at my wife and I was like, is he talking about the stuff that the president was talking about?
Hydrochloridine or something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. And I was like, oh my God, this is like what's going on right now. Plus do you know who directed this? You know who directed this, right?
Soderbergh, right? Or Soderbergh?
Yeah. Soderbergh. Yeah. And so it has his unique, filming style to it. It's like, you know, you're not getting the whole puzzle because mm-hmm. the film doesn't start with this is the person that is getting sick first. It works its way backwards a little bit and it just picks up and you don't really find out who patient zero is until the very end of the film.
Which is a very interesting discovery.
Yeah. So it's like how they do the Ocean's 11. So you start at one point and you work your way forward. And then at the end of the film, let's rewind everything. But I mean, this is kind of a scary film to watch given our current climate, you know?
Yeah. It falls into the too real category. When you watch a movie and it just feels, it hits a little too close to home. This came out in 2011. And if you were to watch it, you know, between then and 2019, it would just be a very detailed film, which, you know, and again, we could talk about all we want. We have had viral scares since then. You know, I do remember, you know, what was it? Bird flu and swine flu and SARS. And, you know, we've had plenty of them. But this shows what happens when it gets out of hand. And we all can kind of relate to that now, unfortunately. When it goes beyond just small pockets.
Yeah, this is pretty surreal to watch. Like, there was even a scene where they're digging mass graves. And I was like, they were doing that in New York like a couple of months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is just, it was a little surreal. But, I mean, again, fantastic film. All the acting is great in it. Matt Damon is fantastic in it. It's not your usual Matt Damon performance. He's just a dad that lost his wife and his son in the same day and trying to protect his daughter from getting sick because that's the only thing he has left. So it's really good. Really, really good. It's just be prepared. I mean, it's just, you'll see things in this mm-hmm. film and you're like, wow, I feel like I'm watching the news.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you? Number one?
My number one comes with a fun little personal story, but my number one is I Am Legend. Will Smith's I Am Legend. So I Am Legend for me comes in at number one because of very similar to how Contagion hits. I think I Am Legend does a phenomenal job of showing the aftermath of a viral outbreak, of a pandemic, of the end, you know, the post-apocalyptic. When somebody's alone, when somebody is trying to make the most of their day to day and not just survive, which I think a lot of us can relate to through quarantine, trying to, you know, fill the gap of our life. Granted, a lot of us have people that we live with. We're not in the same boat that Will Smith's character was. But I think that it brings some reality and it brings an extreme to the situation that I think a lot of people might be feeling right now. So if you haven't, first off, if you haven't seen I Am Legend, go see it. It's great. You know, check it out. I think it's on Netflix. But my fun story is actually, so when I was a senior in high school, my choir group went to New York on a trip just in, I think it was in February, March, it was in the spring. And we're going, we were staying in the Hyatt, which was right next to Grand Central Station. And one morning we were told, hey, you can't go outside. They're filming a movie. And so we stayed in our hotel for like, not in our room, but just in the lobby for a couple of minutes. And they're like, okay, you're clear. Go ahead. But you have to go through Grand Central Station. So we go out, we walk a couple feet and then turn into Grand Central. And as we start, as the day goes on, we realize, oh, hey, the movie's a Will Smith movie called I Am Legend about the end of the world. And at this time, I had no idea that Richard Matheson had wrote this. This was a short story or novella, which I have since read, and it is much better than the film, I would even say. Very different, though. Very different. So they can both exist in a vacuum. But anyway, so we go and we come back later in the day, and it's really cool because you see these stickers that are placed on the windows of all of the buildings that are down the street. And it looks as if the windows are shattered and some of them are completely shattered out. Some of them have pieces missing, but you go up to them and you're like, oh, this is a sticker. So kind of a cool little piece of Hollywood magic there. But then you see a lot of grass and brush that is brushed off to the side of the street. It's April and you have Christmas lights and Christmas decorations still up on the light posts. And then we get back and we meet up with a couple of our friends who said, oh yeah, we went out this morning to get some Dunkin' Donuts at like 5 a.m. and we bumped into Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith. We're like, no, you didn't. And they're like, yeah, we did. Here, look it. And they showed us a picture on their really crappy 2007 cell phones. But yeah, it was really cool to kind of say, like, I was there when they were filming it. Didn't see him. I didn't get anything special, but to see the set, you know, the street, in which it was filmed, that's just fun. But I think on its own, it stands well as not just a viral movie, but I think it's, I mean, I don't think anybody really knows what they are in the film. They aren't what they are in the book, which is vampires, but they're kind of vampiric. They're kind of zombie. But they seem to be a little bit more aware. I don't know. What would you call the creatures in that movie?
First off, two things. You were still in high school in 2007.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Graduated in 2007. 2011 was college.
I was married by then. Jeez. I don't know. You would almost call them, you would have to call them like the infected.
Yeah. They're their own type of creature. They have qualities of many, but I.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
The thing I liked about what I Am Legend is, and I think it's one of Will Smith's better performances, even though for most of the film it's just him and a dog.
Don't even talk about the dog. Oh God.
What I liked about the movie is that in the beginning and the synopsis of the movie is, I feel like, could be based in reality. I mean, and they explained very well in the beginning of the movie that this virus happened as they were trying to find a cure for some type of cancer or something like that. Like this doctor was trying to find some type of cure for cancer and it mutated and got out of control. And then you have your pandemic, which I was like, how has that not happened now?
Yeah. I mean, like, it is very reality based as to the launching point.
I mean, that's something that could literally happen today, is that we are in the lab messing around, trying to figure out to cure some disease or something like that. And shit goes sideways. So I really appreciated that they just weren't like, oh, this virus showed up and fucking killed people and things like that.
From outer space.
Yeah, or, you know, something like that, or some bat fucked a pig, and then we got the virus, and, you know, like, this was, like, I feel like based that in something that could really happen.
Yeah, and I will say, if you haven't read the novella, I would read it. A little bit of insight as to, they are vampires, and it's called I Am Legend because he cannot be infected. Like, it's this flip mentality of, he's the only human in a world of vampires. So he's become this legend to them, of like, does he really exist? Do they, you know, like, whereas we are like, oh, does Dracula really exist? And it's flipped. So it's, he has become a legend and he owns it, you know, as the novel progresses. which they don't really say any reason why it's called I Am Legend in the film. It's just called that, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. It's a Will Smith movie. Well,
the original book, I believe, was called The Omega Man.
Well, the original film was that.
Yeah.
Which was based on
Heston. Yep. Charlton Heston, yeah.
Yep.
Which is very dated, but it's still good.
Very good. Yeah, and it is also based off of I Am Legend by Richard Matheson. But just, I mean, it's one of those that you can sit down and you can read in a sitting, but it's a little lengthy. Great movie, great book. Overall, enjoyed it.
Did they ever say what made them? Because I know he found other people. What made them immune?
Something in the blood.
Okay.
It was just kind of a deficiency or the lack thereof. They had an immunity to it through their blood. And they couldn't explain it. That's why he uses his blood on the rats, and he's trying to figure out, because there's something about him that can't become infected. So he's trying to figure out, well, can he just give his blood to somebody? And he can't. He's got to use it in some sort of a formula.
Which I also appreciated the science part. Like they had quite a few scenes of him desperately trying to figure this out.
Yeah, with the rats.
And eventually he couldn't.
Yeah, right? It brings together so many different aspects of the pandemic, end of the world, post-apocalyptic type of movie. You know, you have the action in the sequences where he's running away and he's got the tripwires and he's trying to survive. You have the drama in the isolation, you know, and his friendship with his dog and trying just to understand, like, the loneliness of if his dog doesn't come back, what will happen? And you got the science, you know, it's all there. I really, I haven't seen it in a few years. I want to go back and watch it, because as we were talking about it, as we're looking at the making the list, I'm like, it's got to be my number one, because I watched it a lot when I was in college and high school as it came out. So there you have it. Our top three and our honorable mentions. This was good. This was fun. We've told ourselves we're going to try to keep it to an hour or less, 45 minutes to half an hour eventually, you know, if we can try to knock it out. But we wanted to give you guys some insight into what to expect and the new format and the kind of the new reboot of the podcast. So this one will be a little longer, but stick through. We will definitely.
We're rusty. Yeah.
And we knew, we came into it saying, hey, we might actually push an hour and a half, which we haven't. So I will take that as a win. I think I have to keep up with the tradition of throwing a shout out to Dre, because I know he will be excited that this is back. Although with the pandemic, not many people are sitting in their office listening or driving to work to listen to podcasts, but I'm sure he will listen to it to get his shout out. Do you have anybody that you're hoping listens and you're excited to share the first episode with?
I'm just excited it's back and we have something to do and something to talk about and look forward to the next one. Can I talk a little bit about what we have on store for the next?
Yeah, go ahead and episode? Preview next week's.
So next week's episode, we are going to do a drive-in profile where we are going to delve into the career and films, the good and the bad ones, of a particular person. Next episode, we'll discuss Judd Apatow, his body of work. And also one of the reasons why we discussed was it's the 15-year anniversary of The 40-Year-Old Virgin, which is coming up in August. So we're going to look at a drive-in profile of Judd Apatow and his films.
Yeah, I got to say, I was thinking about this over the weekend, and I didn't realize just how much I pretty much damn near worshipped this man's film throughout college. I'm thinking about all of the movies that I'm like, oh, I have to go see. And some of them that I didn't even realize until after the fact were his, because he, you know, executive producer, he was really involved, or he wrote but didn't direct. So I'm really excited to talk about this next week, and we'll get to talk about, he definitely does have some stinkers in there, but.
Can I already bring up a topic for us to argue about?
Yeah.
Do we include Freaks and Geeks?
I think it's a launching point, but I don't know. Okay. It's not his. Well, and that's okay. Something to think about. Let's think over this next week. Do we want to include television careers? Because you've got people who've been in movies that we might talk about that we incorporate some of their TV high spots.
My thing is could he have had the films that he's done without having Freaks and Geeks first?
Well, he wouldn't have had the casts, that's for sure. Cause I mean, the vast majority of the people he puts in his films, with the exception of a couple, are from Freaks and Geeks. But yeah, I mean, I think Freaks and Geeks is in the conversation. You okay. know, it's there as a whole body of work.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
A little bit of news, and we'll see. This might be old news by the time this comes out, but when, as of recording, hoping to find out exactly when we're going to get a drop of New Mutants, but the Marvel and Fox, not Fox, I think it's Sony, have actually announced that they will be giving some information about New Mutants at Comic-Con in just a few days. I'm hoping that news is that they're going to release it to video on demand. That's what my futuristic projection is, because it has been about, what, 2 or 3 years in the making that this movie is supposed to have come
so
out.
So long.
It's done. Like, just release it.
Like, literally, Marvel has been sold.
Yeah.
Like, literally, hell froze over before this movie came out.
Yep. Disney did not own New Mutants when they started filming, and Maisie Williams was still a young... Arya Stark. She was, I think, only in like what, season 4 when this started filming.
We still had a few episodes of Game of Thrones before the shit came out.
Yeah, that's true. So I'm hoping that we get video on demand, because that movie needs to be seen. And then I'm just excited to go out and check out Greyhound, which I'll probably go watch this week. If you haven't heard of it, it's the new Tom Hanks movie on Apple TV Plus. Looks pretty good. Good war movie. Not too long. I always like to see my war movies clock in around an hour and a half or an hour 45, because then you know they're going to get straight to the point. So
we are working our way through the unsolved mysteries of Netflix.
We are too. Which one are you on right now?
We are on the season finale one.
Okay, we're not that far. So, yeah, we just got done on... I can't remember the man's name, but he went to a party in like Kansas, and they thought that there might be some racial issues with it. And yeah, so that's the one we just finished. I'm going to say the opener is still the, for me, about halfway through, is still the most interesting one.
My wife and I liked the one with the guy that killed his entire family and then just disappeared.
Yeah. The one was that, well, that one bugged me, 'cause I had to read subtitles the whole damn time. I don't mind subtitles occasionally, but I was thrown off because I wasn't expecting it.
But it's just, it was interesting. Disappeared.
Very interesting. So go watch some Unsolved Mysteries, because that's awesome. You guys can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. We will have updated, but you can still follow the drive-in double feature through the former drive-in handles. We will just update your links, and we'll share those. You can find this podcast and all future podcasts through Anchor, which then distributes us to Apple Podcasts, to Google Podcasts, and a bunch of other ones. But if you are wondering how to get in touch with us, definitely shoot us a message on Twitter or on Facebook, and definitely let us know, does Bird Box actually qualify as a viral movie? Ben says no. I say yes. What do you think? All right. I think that's it. Do we have, we need a sign off. We need a, something to wrap it up. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. I don't know.
Well, I don't know if you can do that now. The way our numbers are surging in Ohio, you may have to go home.
I don't know what it is. We'll throw that one on Twitter too. We'll see if you guys can come up with a sign off. I'm just excited to be back. Ben, thank you for pushing this, and thanks for the first episode. Here's to many more.
I am so excited for this to be back going. I'm, again, one of your biggest fans of drive-in, so I'm glad this is up and going, and I'm very appreciative to be a part of this.
Oh, and finally, thank you to Alex, Alex Hack, now she got married, for our new logo. She did a little bit of twisting and turning with it, and it looks pretty cool. So thank you, Alex, if you're listening to this. Otherwise, we will see you guys next week as we talk some Judd Apatow.